As always, we begin in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. I bear witness that there is one God, and I bear witness that Moses, that Abraham, that Jesus, and that Muhammad are his messengers, and we thank them for the scriptures that they revealed, and we thank them for the revealing word, raising up people from mental, moral, and spiritual death into mental, moral, and spiritual life. We are here because we are accepted, whether we know it or not, as they would call it, the respect for life. And it is out of this respect for life that we've been called to stand for justice for the living. It is in the names of these great ones that I greet you with the green words of peace we say in every language. As-salamu alaykum. Another big round of applause for Dr. Costa. Sister can be here or she can be elsewhere. And elsewhere could mean other continents. And so it's good to have you here visiting us from the motherland where she frequents now and then to provide medical service for those that are less fortunate. But one of the things that we really are growing to know and better to understand is the condition that is being faced by poor people in the Bay Area in many ways does not differ much from what you find in third world countries.
Right.
So the lack of health care in this area is matched in third world countries. The hunger or the disease that you find in these areas are matched by third world countries, and the victimization that we know to law enforcement brutality is matched by third world countries. And so we thank our sister for her continued sacrifice. And I wanted to share with you news that we consider to be good. And that is news that's been overshadowed as a result of the BART strike. That the day before the board met to deal with the striking issue, the day before that, unknown to me, I don't know if I missed it on my calendar, they didn't send me the email, but the board met to discuss the draft of BART Citizen Oversight Review. And I don't know how long that it was debated, and I have not seen the final written product. However, I do know that the BART Citizen Oversight Review model was voted in unanimously by the board of directors on Tuesday or Wednesday. And that is a result and a testament of your work. So, when Dr. Costell said she was asked at a medical conference, what is the community doing there? It is because, quite frankly, you'll find that communities all across the country have very little impact on the political say-so of their own communities.
Right.
You find that there are national debates being held. But even as you watch President Obama struggle as congresspersons are going out into cities to host town hall meetings, and those town hall meetings are being disrupted by forces that didn't even come from the town. They're literally busing people in to challenge these Congress people and using the voices of these outsiders to produce what will be the politics on the insiders. Well, as it is happening in that example, before BART voted on this oversight draft, they asked that they wanted to hear public opinion. We said to them that if you want to hear public opinion, that's good, but you now have to dialogue over the public's opinion. And I believe Dave was there, and they came in with, and I didn't bring it with me, but they brought a stack of letters that had been emailed into BART of opinions about the oversight review. And if you saw those letters, if they gave the weight of those letters that they placed on your physical person, there wouldn't be an oversight. Period. These letters were evidently crafted by organizers who did not reflect the interests of the people that have been standing for justice for Oscar Grant. In fact, these were form letters. And they admittedly, on some of them, were signed by BART police officers, active BART police officers. Others, retired BART police officers. And I would imagine the balance of them were BART police officers' wives, children, sisters, brothers. And when they wrote these letters, one of them said that the reason that Oakland is so crime-ridden is because of these kind of efforts hindering the police. Well, first, that's an undercover racist challenge.
That's right. That's right.
First, you know, them dark people over there are living in this violent thing because of those rabble-rousers like Sharpton and Jesse and whoever's in Oakland. And this is the reason that crime is out of control in Oakland. No, crime is out of control in Oakland because poverty is out of control in Oakland.
That's right.
Crime is out of control in Oakland because the schools are out of control in Oakland.
That's right.
Crime is out of control in Oakland because the government is out of control in Oakland.
Okay.
Don't blame the poor people for acting out of those environments that poverty has produced for them. But for someone to write that the fact that there's an oversight process over what BART employees and law enforcement do would somehow produce crimes. There's no logic in that statement at all. Then another person wrote that if they apply this oversight model to BART policing, then I will never ride BART again.
Well,
fine, walk then. Catch the bus. But what citizen should ever be angry that law enforcement has some kind of oversight in it?
No question.
Any of us that are employed has always oversight over what you do.
That's right, that's right.
You work in the bank, they got 20 cameras in the bank. Five are pointed outward at potential thieves. The other 15 are looking at the tellers. Did you all know that? They got more oversight over the minimum wage earning teller than they do for fear of a bank robber coming through the door. You don't have employees without oversight, except for BART police. Y'all hear that? Everybody's got oversight except for BART police. So we participate in a process that is different from other oversight systems, that's clear. Some would have described it as a hybrid, meaning it borrows some elements from this one and other elements from that one. Differing from some of the larger jurisdictions because those larger jurisdictions have police commissions and the funding to empanel people to respond to thousands of complaints from passengers or residents in those areas. BART differed in that it alleged to have only had a dozen or so complaints in a year. Now, while we know that there would be more than a dozen complaints if there was a system for receiving them, but there still needed to be a system crafted that fit the size of the jurisdiction that BART was dealing with. One of the problems we knew right away after the murder of Brother Oscar was there was no one to secure an investigation and to oversee the fact that BART, quite frankly, did not have a trained internal affairs division. There was no one on scene to see what BART police did that night that they called policing. For BART did not call in to back them up, OPD, or Alameda County Sheriff, or anybody else. They locked everybody out of the process.
Right.
And as a result, what they called an investigation, quite frankly, was tainted from the beginning.
Right.
Now, our point here is that the auditor models that is injected in what we've done. Not auditor that goes in after the fact, you know, it's business. An auditor comes in after you've done all your books, and they come and look and review your books, your writings, your finances to see if you've dotted the I's and crossed the T's. This, which we're calling an auditor, is really an on-site investigator.
Okay.
That investigates alongside whatever they call internal affairs.
Yeah.
That has the power to compel testimony from every officer, just as would internal affairs.
Yeah.
The difference being internal affairs reports to the chief. The auditor reports to the civilian board and the general manager. So the civilian board would have access through this auditor process to the information that the internal affairs agency of the police department would have. In other words, what happened that night? How did it happen? Did you interview those directly involved? When Oscar was killed, interviews weren't had for hours to days. Well, that was wrong.
That's right.
If you shoot somebody while working for me, you don't have days to figure it out. In fact, if you fight somebody while working for me, you don't have hours to figure it out. Officer so-and-so, we understand that there was an incident that you broke somebody's jaw. In the office, now. We need an explanation, now. Even if it were an accident, it was an accident. Chief, I was turning while breaking up a fight, and the person behind me, I hit them with my elbow accidentally, and it broke their jaw. But my point here is you don't have the hours to fabricate a story. When the BART officers were interviewed according to the court record, their testimony, though technically it's not testimony, their interview changed from one interview to the next. The facts that were reported changed from one interview to the next, and I believe all of them admitted at a certain point they saw the video. And they began to change their interviews on the basis not only of what they saw on the video, but of what their lawyers told them that they saw on the video. It got so bad that the judge had to stop Anthony Peroni from his testimony because after he admitted that his lawyer told him of some action on the video of Oscar trying to kick him twice, when we couldn't see it on the video, he made one up on the spot. And he made up a lie right on the spot. There was never in three interviews that Oscar was trying to grab his gun. And the judge looked at him. He didn't allow the other attorney to ask the question. He said, hold it. You're not serious, are you? In other words, the process that we are demanding BART engaged in oversight includes more thorough and a second set of eyes to investigate the investigators. We were clear with BART that their investigators were worthless. And we said from the beginning that if Chief G, who sent a letter for his officers to support Johannes Mezen, to send him money on his books and send him something to read in the few days that he sat in Santa Rita so he'd be more comfortable in his stay there, that tainted any objectivity that he could have had in authorizing an investigation. That if he's supporting Mezzali, he's not investigating Mezzali. So now we are very clear that those in BART were unwilling and in truth by skill and training unable to render an effective investigation in the shooting of Brother Oscar.
That's right.
Now, that being said, the auditor, part of the process that we have helped to craft is to have a skilled investigator with access to everybody that any law enforcement authority would have access to in the process to conduct their own interviews, as well as the right to sit in on the internal affairs interviews. And if the internal affairs department, you don't have a way of not asking a question when they don't want their brother to go down, because their brother's in blue. They have a way of not asking a question. Like, they didn't ask Peroni if he used racial epithets at Austin. He seemed shocked by the question in court. Huh? Not a single officer testified that they heard Peroni call Oscar Grant the B, the A, and the N word. Not a single one. All of them seemed to hear Oscar or his friend saying things. None of them heard their brother officers and sister officers say anything that was irresponsible or ill-spoken or ill-placed. Not one officer said anything that would have offered taint of the testimony on their brother officers. They had to struggle with that. And the reality is that having another investigator that is not one of those officers is really warranted, because the officers, even those that work in internal affairs, evidently have an interest in protecting the common interest of police work or police departments. And so this model is to say, we're sending an investigator by the side of your investigators. Our investigator will report to the civilian board, and the civilian board will receive a recommendation from that investigator. By the way, if we don't like that investigator, we'll see that that investigator is replaced. So now the board has a role in the future selection of that investigator. So, in fact, I think we even talked that the board, if a new chief is to be interviewed, will be able to interview and make recommendations on the new chief. Now, what has happened in terms of time blocks? By many, it's considered historic. Dr. Tosco, being a historian and helper in San Francisco State rallies of the 1960s, few all realize that when the civil rights movement began to make strides, there was a brother before Dr. King, maybe 10 years ahead of him. I believe his name is Bayard Rustin. And he sat down and had a private meeting with then President Franklin Roosevelt. And when they were talking about civil rights, that was Mr. Rustin came to talk about, when they talked about the issue of civil rights, you know, Franklin Roosevelt's wife, Eleanor, was pretty famed as an activist for certain kinds of civil rights. So sitting down with her husband, then president, who'd been a four-term president, which is why they amended the U.S. Constitution to stop a man from being president forever. But when Mr. Rustin sat with him, I'm sorry, not Rustin, was it A. Philip Randolph? It was A. Philip Randolph. They sat down, and after Mr. Randolph told the president what he thought about civil rights and what should be done, President Roosevelt said to him, "Philip, I want you to know that I agree with you 100%. Then he puffed his cigar. He said, "Philip, but there's one thing I want you to do. I want you to make me do it." And the answer was, A. Philip Randolph could not make President Roosevelt do anything. So the time gap between that meeting at the tail of the height of the lynchings of black folks around the South, the time gap between that meeting and the voting and civil rights bill was 20 years. It was 10 years from near that meeting to Emmett Till and Rosa Parks and Brown versus Board of Education. It was 10 more years
from Brown versus Board, Emmett Till, and Rosa Parks before you get to the Civil Rights Bill and Voting Rights Bill. So the time gaps that generally elapse when people are making demands for structural change can be huge. When black folks start asking to be free from slavery, as soon as we were captured, right? How long did it take to meet a legal change? 310 years. So when A. Philip Randolph began to make demand, he was right, and the demand Roosevelt said that he was right. But my point here is the wheels of government tend to turn very slow when you're talking about structural changes. In fact, generally, change in government really means more of the same. So you find that there are some changes that are temporary in nature, that are designed to temporarily appease those that are raising an issue that diminishes the notability or the popularity of those in government. Now, no city in America, even those with citizen review boards, police commissions, can claim to have rid their cities of departments that are involved in brutality, abuses, and murder. That's just a fact. So the fact that there's citizen review is not a guarantee that the departments will be rid of brutality, abuses, and murder. And while many cities have varying models, no one of those models would I consider revelation. I mean, it's nice, there's a model. And I'm saying that only because some of us have crafted in our minds that the only way to do this is the way that another city has done this. Untrue. In fact, when we had the cities or Bart invited them and they were questioned, I distinctly recall in the San Francisco model, someone asked the representative from San Francisco, how many officers have been found to have been wrong or abusive in their conduct under this model and this method? It wasn't zero, but it was close to zero. It really was. It was like two or three. And because of, you know, officer rights, they couldn't expose to us who those officers were and what they had done. But I would imagine you've seen some of them on the news. I believe one of them, Daddy, was a commander in SFPD, and the son, who's also in SFPD, gets into a brawl or something at a bar. Y'all remember that incident? Well, you didn't need some special oversight committee to determine that that man had trouble on his hands. Right? But you end up needing oversight committees because since his daddy was a commander, partner of the chief, whoever the chiefs were in those days, that you find that justice is generally not served, particularly where poor people are doing a complaint. And so the speed with which a system was derived, you know, I'm not a politician, but politicians keep telling me this is unheard of. We don't do anything this fast. How did we get to this point this fast? Well, I can tell you how we got to this point this fast, because you, the people who love justice, you, the people that love truth, you, the people that are dissatisfied enough to come out every Saturday afternoon for the last 8 months to make sure that change has occurred, God has blessed your sacrifice. Now, that doesn't mean the system is perfect. It will be tweaked over the years to match what is most perfect. But we're thankful for all of those that have made many sacrifices. Because as we participate in the process of caring for people who in truth have gone without defense against police abuse and authority. We should thank those good Samaritans. We're in church with a man called the Good Samaritan. You heard of him? What made him unique was that he was willing to serve people that no one else wanted to serve. When Oscar was killed, the first thing that was done was the denial of any wrong from law enforcement and the demonization and criminalization of Oscar.
That's right.
When Parnell Smith, whose family was with us last week, was killed by OPD on July the 15th. The first thing that was done was to deny any wrongdoing on behalf of OPD and the demonization and criminalization of Parnell. When Brownie Polk was killed, the only thing that occurred was what had been occurring, and that was the denial of any wrongdoing from the police department and the attempt to criminalize and demonize Brownie Polk. And so as Dr. Costa was mentioning, we've been blessed to meet all of the families. And what we're finding is this common thread that Uncle Bobby and Sister Wadley and others had to defend the character of Brother Oscar. When in truth, Mesley's mother, whatever her name is, she should be out trying to defend that criminal.
Right.
Y'all with me now?
Yes, sir.
Then, Parnell Smith. The police department gave an explanation, but it didn't make sense. Just like the explanations given with Oscar didn't make sense. First, they reported that it was a shootout. And there was never a shootout. There was a shootout. In fact, Parnell Smith was shot multiple times in the back while fleeing from the police. So he wasn't shooting at the police. And there has been some acknowledgement that he had a weapon. But according to witnesses, he cast his weapon away when he saw law enforcement and ran. Now, they know by ballistic evidence that Brownie Polk did not fire a weapon at the police.
Right.
So they're claiming that he pointed his weapon and it misfired. Parnell Smith. Question. If you're a police officer, and there's several of them, and I pull a gun and point it at several officers, do I get shot in front or do I get shot in the back?
You said in front.
Sir? They wouldn't hang around and wait to figure out if my gun misfired.
Right.
I wouldn't have time. Not if the police was worth the salt in police work. For the first law of life is self-preservation, and that law belongs to police officers too. So if you pointed a gun at me, I would not be wise to wait to figure out what you're going to do with it. It would be too late. Wouldn't be wise of me at all to wait and figure out what you intend to do with that weapon. Then as a result, if I'm a police officer with weapons drawn and you pull a weapon or you're pointing a weapon, I don't see any way on the planet that man would have a chance to turn around and run a block. He was a block away from the contact when he was shot in the back. In other words, this thing about demonizing and criminalizing and falsifying reports is evidently clear in every police department in the country. Now, if there's one that doesn't false report, they'll have to prove themselves to me.
Right.
Because it seems that whenever one unarmed but innocent civilian is killed, the police always have a good explanation. What's our brother's name? Sean Bell? On his wedding day. And they had a good explanation in New York. They said, if I recall, they feared that he was going to run them over with his car. That was parked. They feared that this parked car was going to run them over. Therefore, I think they shot him about 200 times. They fired 50 rounds and got hit about 20 times while sitting in the car. See, my brother's got the details. So now my point here is, that city has a police commission and a civilian review board. Now, I don't know where that case is with that process, but the process must exist that understands that the police tell lies, particularly when making obvious reports, and they're coming across more and more and more of this kind of false reporting from law enforcement officers all over the country. When I watched the man be tased at the A's game and heard the police spokesman declare that was good policing, well, I knew right off the top that wasn't good policing. There's a way to manage people that are ill-behaved without potentially killing them. A taser can kill you. It has lethal force attached with it. You don't electrocute anybody without the potential for killing them. And so now the point that I'm raising here is that those that have been standing against these kind of behaviors, that literally you represent a good Samaritan. For many were frightened, Brother Bobby, to stand by our society. They were waiting. Is he going to have a criminal record? Is he going to be on parole? Are they going to find out that he was on drugs? If he was on drugs, which he wasn't, I would offer that Anthony Peroni was on more drugs than anything that Oscar could have ever smoked, based on his behavior. Y'all with me now? Some say he may have been suffering from steroid rage. Why didn't they test all the officers on the platform? Some of them must have drunk some cowardly juice because they were afraid to stop their brother officers from abusing people. They didn't have the courage to say to their partners in blue, what are you doing? Why are you shouting at these people? Why are you pointing tasers at people? Who was in charge that day, by the way? But Peroni was a person in there. And if that makes you in charge, then the world is in trouble. You mean to tell me, in your standard policy, whoever's there first is in charge? Now, I don't know who arrived here first at the meeting today. And trust me, I respect you all. And know you all are well able. I do. However, that does not mean, ma'am, that you were in charge of the town hall today. And not that you couldn't, and not that you may not need to do so one day. But to give authority to someone simply because they were there first, what did Peroni do when he got there first? He cussed Oscar and his friends out and pointed tasers at him. You mean the first man on the scene is in charge of the whole scene? Where's the command staff? If there were a potential fight with a half a dozen people, you mean they don't call a commander to the scene to oversee, organize, and strategize how to act in a potential riot? No commander, and we didn't hear any of the testimony that any commander ever showed up. Y'all with me now? Bart got issues. But it is the work of the Good Samaritans, you, to look after those that others would flee from. In the story of the Good Samaritan, there was a man that had been hit in the head. He was left for dead. And a priest saw him laying there. and ignored him. A Levite, religious man, saw him laying there and ignored them. Then a man was on a journey from Jerusalem to Jericho. And he found the man there. And he picked him up. He poured oil on his wounds. Then he gave the innkeeper some money and said, take care of him. And if you need more, when I get back, I'll take care of you too. Well, that's the kind of spirit that activists have. So when Dr. Tosco started the meeting and asked, who's an activist? An activist is not one that waits for things to happen. An activist is the stimulus for bringing about that which is new, and to be quite frank about it, we have all been dissatisfied with the way justice has not been served in the murder of Oscar Grant, and every one of us wants to see something new happen with BART and with policing in the Bay Area. So you and I have accepted this role of Good Samaritan. And as a tribute to Brother Oscar and his family, the system of oversight, which is now being passed on to the state legislature, takes on another fight. We have already been forewarned by the members of BART Police Union that when this reaches the state legislature, it was in that stack of letters, when it reaches the state legislature for an amendment to the BART charter, the amendment is necessary because there is no position defined in the current BART charter outside the general manager that can have any view into the police officer's conduct and employee affairs. This position called auditor has that view. So they had, since BART is financed by state greatly, they had to amend the BART charter to accept the auditor process. Now, in order to amend the BART charter, the BART board of directors also voted unanimously that the lobbyists of BART are now working among the legislature, and I don't know what their schedule of doing this is, to ensure that the legislature will support the BART charter amendment to allow for the auditor, which paves the way for the civilian oversight process that we have pursued. And so that part of the process requires a strong presence in Sacramento. So many have wondered, in part, why are you all going into Sacramento with the Caravan for Justice? Well, all of our cities have specific issues. And the most specific issue from Oakland that brings our attention right away is to ensure that the BART civilian oversight process pushes through the legislature. But the fear of these police unions is that if we can push through, it would be historical to some degree to have civilians involved in police discipline. That just doesn't happen. This is a historical process. So since the BART board has agreed unanimously, they felt, BART administration, that a unanimous vote sent to the legislature would carry greater weight, would gain greater support from members of the legislature, many of whom have said that we will support whatever BART comes up with, but that does not mean that we won't see the California Highway Patrol statewide union again. That does not mean we won't see the police chief statewide union again. That does not mean we won't face the Peace Officers Association statewide union again. That doesn't mean that we won't face the Sheriff's Department union again. That doesn't mean that we won't face potentially the prison guard unions again. And by the way, combined, those represent, they claim, the most powerful voting lobbying groups in the state, which is why, by the way, we've gone in with the Caravan for Justice to allow the legislature to know and to see that there is a force outside of police and prisons that you're going to have to deal with if you expect to pass legislation in the state. By the way, this caravan looks much like the state, meaning the state of California, whose so-called minorities have recently become the majority but have been divided. So when you take those activists from the white community and activists from the Latino community and activists from the workers' rights community, activists from the black community, activists from the Asian community, and you combine in activism towards specific issues, then we then become the strongest lobbying and voting bloc in the state of California. That's what's behind Caravan. So now, this effort was sparked by the participation of many whom we must thank. And everyone's not here today, but I want to thank first our Reverend Gordon Humphreys, who opened up his home. He's in Stockton today, his other congregation. Can we give him a big round of applause? Our brother who sat faithfully in the oversight draft committee meetings, the Reverend Daniel Buford. Our brother Dave, who has been faithfully in most of the meetings recording and making public what's supposed to be made public. Right. The hearings of those meetings and also the hearings of these meetings so that everyone can hear what we're doing to stand for justice. I want to thank and assist in our absence, Sister Beatrix, who has made it her personal cause to be at nearly every one of the court proceedings, nearly every one of the planning sessions. I want to thank some of the brothers who walk with us everywhere that we go. Brother Salim, who refuses to miss a town hall. Did you move? Did you get the couch out of the bed? You don't have to go in there and straighten it up. The man in the middle of moving, and he's here in the town hall. We want to thank him right now. We're going to allow him the freedom to do this. But Brother Charles 31 X, who you often see around at these meetings, and Brother Dana X, who have made it their cause to go everywhere that we go to make sure we go safely and in good security. We want to thank Sister Councilperson Desley Brooks, who helped lead the charge as we were making out demands for justice. We want to thank No Justice, No Bar. And I'm especially inspired by the words of Brother Francois and others during the proceedings to help us direct our course. There are many others. Cop Watch Oakland, Cop Watch Berkeley, One Family, and others, New Year's Movement for 2009, and all that have contributed. Of course, Bay Area Revolution Group that have been present every time injustice has been seen used, particularly the police force against the people of the city of Oakland. All who contributed time and talent to prevent another person from being brutalized or killed by BART police without a system of justice to protect the interests of the public. Brother Christoph shared something that we have to be very attentive to in the last public BART meeting over oversight. He said that we not only need to be concerned with the what is the system, the documents that have passed. He said we need to be concerned with the who. And he's not wrong, he's absolutely right. Now, who is it that we now must get busy in dealing with and increase in our effort? Well, first, Police Chief G. Now, a moment ago, I began speaking about good policing according to the layman's view. We are, for the most part, what you call a layman. We're not experts in policing. But I am an expert in knowing when I'm being threatened without cause. So I know right off the top, if you point a weapon at me and I've not done anything, I'm being threatened without cause. I knew right off the top, if you're pointing a laser targeting device at me, and we haven't even had a conversation, I haven't offered you any threat, neither have I offered you any resistance, that you are in fact offering a form of torture. When Oscar was sitting on the ground in obedience to the command of the bar officer. They pulled tasers out and pointed it at his person. He got up when they were putting a targeting device in his midsection. Some might even say they were pointing it at his groin as a threat of castration. But we don't know what that is until Mesley gets in and testifies, or somebody gets in and testifies why they were in fact pointing this laser device at Oscar and his friends. Well, as a layman, I can see that what you're doing with that taser doesn't make any sense. Some folks told us on street witnesses that came to our town halls that Officer Peroni was pointing his taser through the windows on the bar tram. Well, first, a taser dart will likely not go through a window. And even if it did, the force that window would produce would cause the taser dart to miss the target. So when folks said that Peroni was pointing the taser through the windows of the bar train shouting at people, logic made us go, no, he didn't do that. No, he wouldn't. That doesn't make sense. You can't shoot a dart through a window until Mr. Peroni got in and testified. Now you're talking law enforcement stupidity. Now, can a man or a woman be fired from their job for stupidity? Sure you can. Especially when your stupidity is a threat to the public safety. Now, I can distinctly recall in my teen life going to parties, every now and then somebody will come to a party with a gun. And if that gun were displayed in the house party, or a club, what you would find was public panic. Party was over. Folks would start running each other over to get out of the way. Maybe you've not had that experience. I have. Now, I would imagine if I'm on a train and a police officer comes training his weapon at me, whether it was his service revolver or his taser, then my first thought would be, I need to get out of the way. That man is lucky, Peroni, that he didn't create a public disturbance on the train itself when he pointed that taser at a crowded train. But that alone, he should have been fired. Y'all with me now?
Yes, sir.
And so soon, Myers Nave is to deliver a report, and I'm not clear who all will receive this report. I'm sure the general manager will have first access to it. Certainly the police chief, G, will have access to it. But because of employee police rights, there's certain elements of it that I'm sure that you and I will never see, unless it comes out in testimony in the Mesley trial. But then, because they spent $250,000, they're going to have to make a report to the general board. Now, trust me, these elements of bad policing, did you hear me speak, and I don't have any police training? If Myers Nave can't see that Anthony Peroni was a fool with a weapon in his hand, and that his partner Mesley was even more foolish with a weapon in his hand, if they can't see that, then they'll have wasted $250,000. And if NOBLE, the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives, can't see that, then they wasted another $125,000. And Bart will have spent $375,000 on PR spin. So I'm anxious to see what Myers Nave arrives at as a conclusion. Surely, they should conclude. Let me give you an example. Oscar was killed on New Year's Eve. New Year's morning. Surely, since they had to deploy extra officers, and many of them were deployed in riot gear, surely, surely, there was a meeting of the officers. I remember growing up watching the old SWAT series and some of the other old police shows. And they would come into a room and get a briefing before they hit the field on a daily basis. Well, I don't know whether or not law enforcement does that any longer, but I tell you what, if you're concerned, one, since 9/11 of terrorism, to the point that BART has a SWAT team, which doesn't make any sense to me. But they got a special tactical team, and they're concerned with terrorism on New Year's Day, and they're concerned with New Year's Reveille on New Year's Eve. It seemed to me you huddle up your team, look team. We're expecting X number of riders tonight. We'll be on full alert because they'll be coming out of these wild parties in San Francisco. They'll be traveling from parts distant to get to San Francisco. Every description we've heard of the train that Oscar was on was jam-packed to the rafters. Is that right? 1 a.m. And they're traveling, many from San Francisco, because that's the most favorite destination, maybe some from Jack London. I don't think there was a whole lot of folks partying at Fruitvale, or Coliseum, or San Leandro, or Bay Bay. The parties were in San Francisco, maybe Jack London. So now they knew right off the top that they would have had whatever thousands of people, in addition to what they normally have as a ridership, on that night, and that many of them may be drunk, high, having a good time. Right? Seems like you get your officers together. Look, you know we're going to have some drunk folks. We're going to have some inebriated people. You be careful out there. Be mindful of how you speak, how you walk, and how you talk. And don't assume that everybody is a bank robber. Some of these just had a little bit too much to drink. So while we, work on our management skills, using our voice for control, whatever, there's something that you say and do. And if something breaks out, then call for backup because many are traveling in groups. You know, did they do that before that night? If they didn't, they're pretty dumb. But did I say that you should get fired for being stupid? With a gun on your hip? If the chief did not organize his police force to deal with the day as unique as New Year's Eve, then that's pretty stupid. Y'all with me now? Stupidity is a cause for termination of employment. There's no way that you take on such a massive engagement in law enforcement and you don't have a briefing, some specialized training of law enforcement authorities to deal with the specialness of the night. Now, if they didn't do that, and I don't think that they did, because to this point, every time that we think that there's no way that they would be so stupid to do such a thing, guess what? They've done it every time. And they've proven us wrong every time. And they've done the stupid thing on every occasion. Now, if Myers nominee doesn't see that, then they paid them $250,000 to rubber stamp what's been done. Hopefully, we will see that report soon. Questions that Myers nominee should be able to answer, and any law enforcement office should answer, who was in charge that night? Where was the command staff? What kind of training and preparation went into making Officer Peroni and Mezzini and others ready to serve on January the 1st? How could Mr. Mezzini have thought Oscar had it done after they detained him for so many minutes?
Why weren't Oscar and his friends checked for weapons? Checking them for weapons would have removed the fear that he had a gun. Why wasn't anyone checked? In truth, we heard it in the testimony of Peroni. He said that if Oscar Grant had not been shot and killed, they would not have even taken their names. Well, where is that in the policy? That you brutalize people, throw them against the wall. He was proud of this muscular throw of Michael against the wall. And said if he had a gun, he couldn't have used it because the way I threw him into the wall, he needed both hands to not smash his face. So I wasn't worried about his hands, but I threw him the way I threw him. Well, now, that being said, well, why did you throw him? And after you throw somebody like that, where's that in your report? I remember them reciting a report that said he threw somebody into the wall. I remember them writing a report that threw Oscar down on his face. He boasted about pulling somebody's hair in testimony. Watch my hair take down here. But I don't think he wrote that in the report. So what kind of report is a law enforcement officer supposed to do anyway? These are questions that Myers Nave and others should answer. What is Bart's taser policy in the first place? Since OPD declared, after shooting Brown and Polk, that you don't use a taser unless there's another officer backing you up with their primary weapon. That you don't use the taser unless there's a force greater than the taser already deployed to back you up. But again, Bart officers entered with tasers in their hands with no backup. Does Bart even have a taser policy? They only had tasers in their hands for 2 to 3 weeks before they threatened Oscar and all his friends with the taser. Now, since they have already demonstrated the misuse of tasers, maybe they should all have their tasers removed. They should have their guns removed. Myers Nave and Noble have a whole lot to report. I hope that these organizations are sincere to the cause for which they've been hired. Now, I'm a layman, and so are you and I together. I don't think any of us, unless the government sent an undercover police officer in here, are the police. Now, that being stated, if we can see questions and challenges to the way we have seen policing done that night already, then surely these $375,000 worth of Bart money, now here the poor union fighting over salaries and benefits, they threw $375,000 out to satisfy public opinion. So it's really like blood money. Let's spend up some money to appease the public's demand that we do something. But the thing that these organizations had been hired to do, we could help them with that. All we had to do was ask them to ask the logical questions. One lawyer could have gone in. One good attorney. And maybe that's who Myers Nave was. How many people did it take them to earn $250,000? Probably one lawyer and two staffers. Right? Now, I'm not angry with Myers Nave. That's what they do for a living, that God bless them to deliver a goodly report. However, the point here is that Bart, in his management of his resources, surely has allocated resources to deal with public opinion. I didn't know Bart had a website until Oscar was killed. I'm sure he did, and I didn't pay any attention. You with me now? I didn't know Bart sent out emails. Now they got something
to send you BART updates on Twitter or Facebook, and they'll send you updates to your mobile phone. Who wants to know what BART is doing 24/7? You need an update on your mobile phone. See, that was an action taken when they saw their reputation being muddy. But the best way to get the mud off their reputation is to render justice in the murder of Oscar Grant. Every officer that misacted that evening ought to be relieved of duty. And those that were ill-trained need to be properly trained. Some were obviously worthy of being relieved. Those who walked in court and lied should be fired because they're covering up for a murder. And the DA really should strongly consider whether to expand charges beyond Johannes Mezley to all of those that would lie in court and to cover over what had happened. I think that when you use the badge of your authority to cover over what had happened, it seemed to me maybe you should be charged with obstruction of justice. Perjury in the lease. Where a judge had to let him know in a preliminary, hey, look, you don't even need to do much in a preliminary hearing. But they went so far in the preliminary hearing to lay the base for their lie that the judge had to tell them to stop. I don't need to hear any more. You would fill this courtroom with so many lies, I'm getting sick to my stomach. Can't say it anyway. But he said, stop. I don't need to hear any more. If what you have to say cannot tell me what Mezley was thinking, then you're wasting your time. Period. The only thing I need to know is why did Mezley shoot? Everything else is irrelevant. So then the defense attorney uses the judge stopping of this testimony, which had nothing to do with what Mezley was thinking. It only had to do with, I don't know what that man was trying to prove. I guess he was trying to prove whether or not Mezley was trained in the use of the case. One thing that we do know was that he was trained in the use of his gun. So he didn't have to be trained in the taser because he didn't use the taser. Okay. He used the gun. So even if they said that he hadn't had sufficient hours of taser training, well, maybe he didn't. But he didn't pull a taser. He pulled a gun on which he had plenty of hours of gun training. And with plenty of hours of gun training, surely he knew the difference between a lightweight weapon and a heavy steel gun. Surely he knew the difference, particularly when he gripped it with two hands, carefully aimed, and fired. If it were a taser, it would have lit up at him. It had a power light on it. He didn't see any of those tase devices. He knew what he pulled because he'd been trained in the use of guns for many years, including before he was a BART officer. I believe he came out of Iraq as a military man. That's Peroni. But most of these officers, you're right. But they, trust me, they got enough time in a gun shooting range to know the use of a gun. You don't join any law enforcement department without the use of a gun. And so, sisters and brothers, as we wind this down, ask Brother Bobby if he'd like to share anything with us. The other elements of our work that are forthcoming, we need to make sure that as Myers Nave's report is delivered, that we're prepared to demand disciplinary acts against the chief and the officers involved on the platform, those that were wrong. And really, correction. There are some who may not have been wrong, but who are very weak. See, nothing stopped any of those officers from saying, why are you all treating these young men like this? See, that's being morally weak. An officer of the law should have a moral code of conduct to protect the people from immoral actions from the offices. As soon as Peroni started shouting the B word and the A word and the N word folk and the F word, he told Oscar and his friend, Michael, get off my effing train. See, as soon as those words came out of his mouth, one of his partners, hold on now, partner. First, we got a job to do. And you're not helping. You're making this job more difficult. You get off the train. I'll go get these young men. Young brothers, can I talk to you? Please step off the train with me. They have an old saying, good cop, bad cop. Okay. Well, all cops should be good. No cop should be bad. Right? Bad cop means dead civilian. So we don't need to play good cop, bad cop. Now, if you mean merciful cop, firm cop, that's different. But good cop, bad cop, we don't need any bad cops. We need that every officer of the law practice good. Now, as the coming days unfold, pay very careful attention to the Myers-Nave report when it is released. It should have been released. It's overdue. And its release should say to the general manager and the board of directors that we got major problems and that BART needs an overhaul. Now, the Raiders have not been so successful over the last few years of football. Is that true? Who's the coach now? How long have you been the coach? A piece of the season. Who was coach before him? How long was he the coach? One and a quarter season. Who was the coach before him? Archie, second round. Man got fired twice. Who was the coach before him?
Joe Callahan.
Callahan. You know what the point here is? Why in the world has Chief G been on this job this long and these officers are this poorly trained? If Al Davis is wise enough to say, no, this don't work, get another one. This don't work, get another one. This don't work, get another one. Well, so many things didn't work on January the 1st, it's really a no-brainer that Miss Duggar should have said, get another one a long time ago. And her failure to say, get another one, then says to the owner, Al's the owner. Dorothy Duggar is not. Then the owner then looks at the general manager. Look, general manager, if you don't get rid of that terrible coach, then you're going to have to go. What, you got a personal relationship or something? Is it an affair? Love triangle? Something? Why are you holding on? There's no reason to hold on. You've demonstrated that the team keeps losing. January the 1st was a blowout loss. Now, if you, general manager, don't make the change, then you, general manager, need to be changed yourself. I'm the owner.
You ain't no owner, Brother Keith. You buy a bar ticket like anybody else.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm a taxpayer. And it is my taxpayer dollars that provide BART the mechanism. I'm a BART rider on occasion. Very rare occasion, but on occasion. That makes me the owner. And as the owner, I'm empowered to go to the board and say to the board, fire the coach. The board will tell you, well, we don't have the authority to fire the coach. Well, you have the authority to deal with the general manager. That's the way they explain it to us.
that the board doesn't have employee authority other than the employees the board hired, the general manager, whoever else that is. Well, board, general manager doesn't have much longer to figure this out. So the same angry crowds you saw in the third week of January will be the angry crowds that you'll see when this report comes down and you have not made an action to relieve the police chief. So we need to let our community know very clearly that time is ticking. It doesn't have to take 10 years. It doesn't have to take 20 years. They claim that they needed facts in order to make the proper decision. Well, the time for those facts have arrived. The reports from Myers Nave is to be delivered. It is not already delivered. And the report from Noble is to be delivered very soon. So I'm sure that we would concur. How many of you believe that Chief G must go? Okay. We've got consent. So now the question becomes strategy and method. And in the coming weeks, we'll be working that out through the community council and others to ensure that our strategy and method is most effective. Finally, Oakland has hired a new police chief. An African-American chief who comes out of Long Beach, California. We are going to study his history as carefully as we can. We've been assured by those in elected office, particularly the mayor, that he would search for a candidate that was in full agreement with police oversight procedures and in full agreement with the idea of community policing, as opposed to the roving bands of officers that appeared to be occupying armies. Now, whether or not the new chief is that type of chief, I don't know yet. The verdict hasn't been rendered. We haven't investigated the facts closely enough yet. We pray that the mayor has made a good decision, but we don't know how good that decision is. I do know as he comes into office, he's going to have to deal with Brownie Polk. He's going to have to deal with Parnell Smith. He's still dealing with the aftermath of Lavelle Mixon. There's a 16-year-old that was unarmed and shot by an OPD officer. So he's got a lot of cases to inherit. It's not his fault what had happened, but by accepting the duty as police chief, it will be his responsibility to correct the way that policing has been done that have led to many unjustified shootings. They say that in the city of Long Beach, under his chief term, that Long Beach officer-involved shootings decreased 70%. That's what they say. They say that while he served as chief of police in Long Beach, the crime rate had reduced in some significant number. So these are good reports, according to the media, of him, and we're looking forward to meeting him and or the command staff of OPD, as well as getting better acquainted with the oversight procedure for the city of Oakland. We have had, in these meetings, our sister Rashida Grenage, who's one of the leading voices of OPD oversight, but I have not seen the full impact of Oakland's City of Oakland's oversight procedures as of yet. I don't know, for an example, what those procedures, how they impacted the Ryder's case, if they impacted the Ryder's case at all. Federal government stepped in on the Ryder's case. So OPD is still under federal observation. So each of these acts by a law enforcement officer by OPD involves a certain level of reporting and investigation through the federal government because of what happened with the Ryder's case. And so we're looking forward to engaging you, engaging them, and for the body that you want to share any thoughts. Please receive our brother, Bobby.